You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by RECO, your local guide for all things real estate investing in Colorado.
Hey everyone, Chris Lopez here, and we have your March monthly updates for Colorado. So I'm joined by Jenny Bayless, Jeff White, and Troy Howe. What's up, crew? How's everyone?
Doing well.
Hey guys.
Fantastic.
Doing good.
Yeah. Well, I know we got a lot to talk about today. We are going to talk about some news articles. We're going to talk about some stats we're seeing, and we're going to talk about some deals we're doing and some properties that we're selling. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. So Jenny, I know, you know, when we're prepping for the show, you're the first one to talk about having a news article. So you get to go first.
All right. Sounds good. So I'm referencing, it's an article by Brett Forrest called April Rent Report, Springs a Soft Market with Slight Rent Decrease, More Apartments. Which I thought was interesting, as probably the first time I've seen a headline mentioning, you know, soft and Colorado Springs rental market in many, many years. So it's just going on to say, basically, technically prices have gone down. It is a negative 0.3% decrease. So it's really not a huge difference. We're probably talking like a few dollars, but I think it's more the sentiment surrounding it. And they're just saying that the average monthly rent down here is $1,450 a month. Still, compared to Denver, rent is $350 less per month. But the most important item that I got out of this news article was that it says Colorado Springs saw a record number of new housing supply hit the market with 3,000 completed units last year and another 9,000 under construction. Tatiana Bailey, founder and executive director of Data-Driven Economic Strategies, said that the sudden market saturation is remnant of low interest rates several years ago. So this is finally, we're starting to see those, you know, high-rise apartments, those new builds downtown starting to come live. And I think that will be very interesting to see how that impacts vacancy rate, how it impacts prices. Because I think the key difference, you know, that I'm trying to wrestle with, you know, mentally, is these units are like luxury A-class units, well over $2,000 a month in rent. You know, none of my holdings are at that price point. I don't think a lot of our clients are either. So I'm very curious to see kind of what the dynamic is that comes into play about that. And then I thought one other thing that I thought was interesting was further down the article, they mentioned that Bailey recommended renters to consider doubling up by living with parents, other family, or more roommates. So just kind of seeing that in print was interesting to me, because I know that we talk about that a lot, you know, amongst each other, and that being a good strategy, whether owning the property or being a renter. So seeing that kind of becoming more normalized, I found to be interesting.
I know. So the article said for people renting to go out there and double up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, yeah. The couple things on that, the Colorado Springs, I mean, we are seeing, you know, at least, you know, like Denver multifamily, Denver apartments, those rents have dipped as well. I can't remember the exact amount, but I think it was like $30 or so kind of year over year. Give, you know, no one go quote me on that, but it was just a little soft, like what you were saying as well. But single family rents are still staying very strong. Yeah. And I think we're seeing the same trend where we're going to have a lot of these Class A luxury apartments come online, and then in like 12 to 18 months, it's going to be a cliff of no new pipeline coming on. So probably see some vacancy go up, some rents go down, and then with no inventory coming up, we know what happens again.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really interesting. I mean, just for our portfolio, I think I might've mentioned we did a rehab on one of our rentals, raised the rent on that. That actually, the person that moved into that rental is actually a current tenant. So then we re-rented his place, got about $160 more a month in rent on that place, did another turnover, got another 100 $120 more a month in rent. And I don't know if it has to do with our price point or if I'm just, you know, pretty aggressive in getting tenants in there or what the deal is. But yeah, just kind of at that lower price point that we're operating at is, you know, we're not really seeing much of a difference.
So really what you were saying there about Colorado Springs, very random. So a few weeks ago, or I guess a month ago, we did a couple day trips of skiing in Breckenridge, and I was doing a solo chair ride. I was chatting with a guy next to me. Well, by the end of the chair ride, it comes out he's from Chicago, and he's part of one of the biggest apartment builders in Colorado Springs. He's done a lot of that Class A stuff. He's done like 2,000 some units the last couple of years. And so he's like, yeah, I think we're part of the reason why rents are getting soft up there, but we're still building. We'll still believe in the market. He's like, yeah, we're going to, things are going to soften up. But he's like, yeah, we don't, honestly don't care. It's such a great market. Again, this was like a 5-minute conversation, but like, it was just so, such a small world. But then he's like, yeah, we're not fazed by that one bit. We're still going strong.
Wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, trying to catch up with them, but trying to find some off a chairlift was hard when we threw names at each other. If I do, yeah, I'll let you give you guys an update.
All right. Please do.
So some more news on here. So HB 24-1098. Anyone know what that is?
No fault eviction.
Close. You're close enough. You get the ding, ding, ding. Cause required for eviction of residential tenant. And so that did pass the House. It did pass the Senate. And it's sitting on Governor Polis's desk as of like April 10th. So like 2 days ago as of this recording. And so it sounds like it'll probably get signed. But I've got this pulled up on the website here. The following conditions constitute grounds for a no-fault eviction of a residential tenant with certain limitations: demolition or conversion of the residential premise, substantial repairs or renovations, occupancy assumed by the landlord or family member, withdrawal of the residential premise from the rental market, or a tenant refuses to sign a new lease with reasonable terms, and a tenant has a history of non-payment of rent. And so from my understanding that, if it doesn't check that, you basically have to renew to your tenant. So that is going to cause some headaches for landlords around the state, it sounds like. So, I mean, you were talking about before this, Jeff, as we were getting prepped for the podcast, you were saying that's going to be good for the big guys. Why do you say that?
Because small-time mom-and-pop landlords, which is majority of our audience, including ourselves, we see stuff like this as more negative things. It's like affects us more negatively than a corporate landlord that has, you know, 10 attorneys on staff. They could handle, if anything, they like this stuff because it eliminates the competition, which is us. Because when we sell, we don't usually sell to other investors. We sell to owner occupants. So we actually take rent. Usually when we sell, it's to people that aren't renting. So there's less rentals on the market. So it helps the Class A guys, or let's say Class A, but more of the corporations that they actually probably love these types of restrictive laws that affect more of the small guys because it eliminates us. And that's what their preference. They want less competition and they could just acquire more rentals and, you know, be able to afford going into litigation. They have the that their attorneys, they have a whole, probably a whole legal department to handle stuff versus mom and pops can't handle all these restrictions. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. The next thing I'm looking for, especially in Denver or Boulder, is like rent control. If they ever undo that law the next year or two, I wouldn't be surprised if those two cities push for that. But going back to this, that's the reason why I think it's a good thing for them, bad thing for us.
So you think it's going to cause a lot of smaller investors to exercise the taking the unit out of the rental pool option and just sell it?
Yeah, I mean, I just have anecdotal information, if that's a word. Is that a word? Anecdotal. from Mile, like a couple of investors I've talked to, and then one of the groups I follow on Facebook is Mile High Landlords, and they're a lot of them talked about it already, Chris, and they said, yeah, if that thing passes, I'm definitely going to look to sell and move my money somewhere else. And obviously that's not every landlord thinks the same way, but that's small sample size. But even a small sample size, that could affect, definitely affect the market, especially less. But in a way, if you hold on, I look at the reverse way of like, Well, if you find a way to make it work, you hold on to it. Actually, this it can also help out the small landlord too if you're willing to deal with the stuff.
Yeah, and I've I think anytime there's change, there's going to be good outcomes, bad outcomes from it. And I talked to a lot of people, especially the Property Llama software, and I've had the same sentiment where people, even if they're not selling, they're focusing their new investments out of state with, since they're not a fan of this. And I also find the headline on here misleading, no fault eviction. This is about non-renewals. It's not eviction. It's about, I don't want to renew your lease. That's not an eviction. That's, our contract as a customer, is over. So yeah, I think that bill is not going to be, it's not going to be great. But one of the people I talked to said, hey, if that, that does go through, with all the stuff being added on here, yeah, for those that do hold on, it's just going to really start driving up rents in the long run. So that's, I think, what you're alluding to as well, Jeff. So yeah, who knows, but that is on the desk there. My main point of bringing this up so everyone is aware is, I'd say two action items is, if you're a self-managing landlord, be on top of all the legislation coming out. A lot came out last year. A lot of the stuff that did not get passed last year is in the pipeline for this year. And so you want to be on top of that. Obviously, the professional property managers and corporations are, but there's a lot of stuff where if you don't know, you can get tripped up on and you can get fined and you can get some hefty fines on there. Second, there's the group, Colorado Landlord Legislative Coalition, CLLC. They are an advocacy group. I would recommend you guys get on their email list and become a member for $10 a month. They do a lot of great, being the voice of the landlord at the Colorado level. And so be proactive with them and be proactive with your state representatives. So Troy, what's going on with lending, man? Headlines have not been fun the last little bit.
No. Yeah, it's not been good. CPI came in higher than expected, so that doesn't bode well for interest rates. But if it's any consolation, it's not as bad as it has been. It popped up a little bit from where it kind of was, doing better. But still not the end of the world by any means. And we've had a fair amount of clients, Jeff, that we've worked with in higher rate environment than what we're currently at, even with this CPI number not doing us any favors this week.
And that's a good point to make on it's been a little doom and gloomy so far for our first 10 minutes of the podcast with, not so good news. But keep in mind, there's always opportunity out there. I mean, we're still getting deals done. There's still opportunities. People still need to sell their property. So don't say, oh, wow, the world's over. No, there's still opportunities out there, especially there's less people out there buying as well.
Yep.
But what did, because I think it was 2 days ago that inflation data came out, Troy. What did rates do? Did they react?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely react. We probably saw at least a solid eighth, maybe even a 0.25% bump in the interest rate. But again, in the big scheme of things, it's not like you should stop. I mean, there's still stuff to be done, and Jeff will probably talk a little bit about that, as we go through this. I mean, you've got a stellar deal that you're kind of honing in on yourself.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into that. Let's talk some deals for a little bit.
Cool. Just hop on. Okay. So, we could start with the deal I'm looking at right now. It's a triplex in Southwest Denver for $500K. Two bed, one bath. Each unit is two bed, one bath, one bed, one bath, one bed, one bath. So four bed, three bath total for the triplex. So pretty small, but priced accordingly and located in a spot which is still close enough to attract above market rents. I talked about this before, getting Section 8 to me is really amazing because you can get those Class A rents for Class C properties. And this is a perfect example. Right now, the two bed, one bath unit is vacant. That one will get between $2,200 to $2,300. The one bed, one baths have month to month leases at $1,000 each. When I turn over those guys, it will be $1,800 to $1,900 per unit for one bedrooms. So if you do the math, it will easily be one where I could buy it with owner-occupied financing, the 5% down conventional loan product that Troy and I have talked about, And then even after moving out, while living there, even after moving out, it'll still be a live for free type deal, and then cash flow pretty well after moving out too. So it's kind of one of those deals that I'm willing to make the move into a little one bed, one bath unit.
And your wife is as well?
Yes. As long as we got our own bathroom and laundry, we're okay with it, you know.
So those are the rules?
Yeah. So we're still okay. Our eventual goal is Sloan's Lake, Chris, but not there yet. We got a couple more to go.
All right.
It's all like, I don't want the green red hotel until we get a few more greenhouses.
Troy, I think you're about to say something. I cut you off.
No, I didn't mean to cut you guys off either. So, but no, I was looking at the property. It's a nice, clean little ranch, all brick ranch setup. So, I mean, you would think at that price point, you're kind of like, oh my gosh, what are you getting? But I glanced at it and it's a good looking little property.
So I don't know if you can answer this question, but give a disclaimer if you need to. So, you know, 5% down on the $500,000 multifamily right now, what's kind of the interest rate and kind of what's the PMI on those roughly, since this is a newer loan product still?
Without running my little calculator on it, I mean, interest rate's going to be sub 7. I mean, high sixes, mid sixes, probably more on the high end of the sixes. Just
okay, so high sixes.
Yep. Mortgage insurance for stellar borrower like Jeff, and I'm really shooting from the hip, you know, you might be monthly on about $150-$175.
Oh, that's a lot lower than I expect. I mean, both of those, the monthly PMI and the rates are lower. Now, of course, like I said, I'll give Troy the disclaimer here. That was just to kind of get a ballpark.
Yep.
Of course, that is not that's not a quote for anything. Always go talk to Troy directly. Please. If you need a quote for you. But wow, that's actually a lot less than PMI than I was expecting.
Yeah. And again, there's a little bit of a premium for somebody. You know, and it could be a little closer to $200 on a monthly basis, but I think it'll be sub 200 for the monthly PMI. But that's for a stellar borrower like Jeff with superior credit scores. You know, anytime you're doing those conventional loans, you want to have really 760 plus credit scores to optimize the monthly mortgage insurance. But a little bit of a bump for it being a multi-unit, but not much. Jeff, you and I did some analysis on that several weeks ago, that single family MI coverage is a little less expensive, but again, not earth-shattering difference.
Yeah, so there's not that big of a premium between the two, huh?
Yeah, and there's also a little bit of a price adjustment Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have for it being a multi-unit property. So whether it's a duplex or a fourplex, they give a little bit of a slight bump in the price because they look at it a little more risk, right? But not much. And again, with Jeff doing what he's doing on the house hack side, that property is going to perform great.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the best opportunities out there, you know, all up and down the Front Range is house hack, whether it's a single family or house hack, a multifamily. I mean, just with the amazing down payments, and a lot of times you can find some really creative value add stuff with a lot more sweat equity without big dollars in. Really great opportunity for like directly owned rentals right now.
Yeah. Jeff Still's a case in point.
Yeah. Look every day, Chris. That's a secret.
Well, that's a secret to anything in life to be successful. Work every day. When you've got something you don't have to, let me know. But everything I've ever done, I've worked every day for. I know all of you guys here on the podcast, you're the same way. You guys have the same work ethic. All right. So talking some stats here. I mean, I got a couple high level stats in Denver. I mean, year over year, median and average price point is up about 5 to 5.5%. So, I mean, that's kind of on the higher side of what we were forecasting, but, you know, 3 to 5% for the year. Now, obviously, this is, you know, spring time, so things will probably taper off later this year. But, I mean, prices are up about 5% from last year. Our new listings year over year up about 25%. So that's a big jump in listings on there. Other than that, I mean, don't have any, like, other, you know, all the other stats kind of go in line with there. You know, as far as days on market, other numbers we're seeing, but yeah, prices are up about 5% year over year. Listings are up some. And then Jenny, are you kind of seeing a similar trend down south?
Yep. Same thing. Median sales price month over month is up 3.1%. 2.2 year over year. New listings are up 17% and sales are up 18% for month over month, but both of those are down year over year. So I thought that was kind of interesting that it just seems like they're getting picked up and absorbed pretty quickly. But it's still significantly less than last year even. So I guess that's just kind of, everything that we've been hearing about in the news, that people are hesitant to list their homes for sale. I think that's kind of revealing itself in the numbers.
I agree. But it's still here's the thing. I was looking, pull up the stats here, at least here in Denver, we're at just under 6,000 active listings. The average listings between 1985 and 2023 March were 13,400. We are still not quite a third below average, but pretty close to it. We're still in a low inventory environment, which is why I think while we're still seeing prices go up some. So let's see. There was one more stat I wanted to cover and I lost my notes here. I'll come back and find it in a second. But talk about some other deals. I know last time on the podcast I mentioned, I think I just closed on two condos I owned in Aurora. So I closed on those, I think it was March 6th or March 7th. So I sold both of those. So I'll give everyone a little update on here. So those were properties I bought in, I think, about 4 years ago, like mid-2020. And then sold them this last year. And from the high level, the reason I sold them is I bought them for about $200,000 each. And I could sell them, if I went to market, I could sell them for $275,000. And I'm actually just selling them off market to another investor I know through the podcast and networking for $265,000. And so actually we all came out a couple dollars ahead. So it was a lower transaction cost, sold it as is, rather than doing a couple $1,000s in fixed up costs so he could fix up the way he wanted to. And then also it was just, a quicker time for me to go sell it. Hey, the properties were vacant for 2 weeks versus 2 months, which is always, less holding time, the better. But the main reason I sold those is, from the principal I put in about the $50,000 down payment, after I did, sold everything, took out the transaction cost, I had more than double my money. And that's on top of the cash flow and everything. And so if I've doubled my money and it's been a handful of years, I'm happy with that. Kind of one of my overall investing goals in real estate is if I can double my money within 5 years, I'm happy. And that's just been one of my higher level guiding principles. And I was like, great, I can sell it. I have more than double my money. Plus I've gotten some cash flow, all the great depreciation benefits over the years. And then also just kind of going along the lines of simplifying things. My wife and I have our third daughter who's now 2 months old. So I'm also, The more I can simplify, and I didn't see a big increase in what prices would do on those condos. So I sold them. I'm going to do a partial lazy 1031 exchange. So I think when everything was said and done, I probably about $250,000 in proceeds. And probably about half of that, I owe some taxes on because some of that was principal. So I'm investing a good chunk of that into some multifamily so I can just get a lot of depreciation off of there. And I'm actually investing some other stuff into some debt funds as well, just for some higher cash on cash. Since cash flowing properties are very hard to find right now, 2 years ago, I started investing in debt funds or income funds, where they're basically a hard money lender. And I invest with them and they go lend it out to fix and flippers and people that need non-traditional financing. And I'm going to put some money in there for, 10% cash on cash return. And it's still relatively liquid. Plus I'll owe some taxes about this time next year, probably about $25,000 in taxes after I factor away some depreciation. So I'm putting the money in there to park it for a while so I can make some interest, but also make sure I have money to pay taxes on there next year. And I'm going to just be opportunistic with the other money I have to go out there and invest into other deals. But I was very happy a great time to sell in the spring. I doubled my money within my 5-year mark, and I didn't see any more big upside in the properties I'd owned there. I was like, great, I can take this money. I can still capture some fairly high depreciation tax laws this year to take out a big part of the tax bite and then go out there and be opportunistic in what I do with the money. You guys got any questions or comments on there?
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like your thought about the, well, you know, your threshold being, can I double my money in 5 years? Because I've wrestled with that idea as well. Like, how many years of cash flow is it going to take, you know, to make up for your gain? Or can you just cash out the gain and, you know, roll that into something else? So I think that's a really good point for people to kind of have their own personal, you know, pull points on that.
Yeah. And the reason I came up with there was just, you know, I'm always, you know, I always, you know, I want as much money as I possibly could make in life, you know, I think we all do. And obviously you want to enjoy it. And when I bought my first place, gosh, I don't know, 13 years ago, I did zero down. When I sold it, I had about $200,000 invested in that. And then 5 years later, that $200,000 was like $500,000. So I was like, wow, if I can just keep doubling my money like this, you know, on that one investment, it got me thinking, well, hey, man, another 5 years from that one investment with no money down, I'll have like $1 million out of there. And so it got me really taking a step back and thinking about, you know, what is, you know, I think, realistic and what is a good like risk reward. Like, I'm not trying to dump my money in a year or two. That's too risky. And I'm also not that smart. But like, you know, looking at what other investors have done and just historical trends of real estate, I think that like, you know, doubling your money in like 4 to 5 years is pretty realistic and you can pretty consistently do it. And so as I was just going through, you know, my mental math and starting to play, you know, mental Monopoly with myself, I was like, wow, if I did that here, by the time I'm 60, I've got this, I have this. And so that's kind of like my simplified goal is just, hey, when I have something parked, if I can double it in 5 years, I'm a happy camper. And that way I also don't feel like I get too greedy. I also don't get FOMO seeing what these other people do on Instagram of, you know, making $1 billion in crypto in 5 days. Yeah. So I hit that and I just, it was just, yeah, nice to like realize a big gain like that. I've also gotten more in the concept of like a longer, I've always had viewed cash flow as monthly. And I was like, well, if I sell a property, that's just like a giant lumpy cash flow. And whether I get, you know, $5,000 a month or I get $100,000 once a year, I can be smarter with the money to like still live off of it and reinvest it. So I've had some of my perceptions change on there for like how I view the lumpy cash flow and just my overall thesis of if I can double in 5 years, I'm a very, very happy person.
I like it.
Yeah, recycling capital, Chris, very impressive. So you're not just having to leave it in that debt equity in there or trying to do HELOCs and those are high risk. You know, if you pull that money and then, you know, you can't refi out of that HELOC or pay it off, it's there's creative strategies to pull equity out by like, your approach of trying to just dump, very simple, just dump your money and then get out and move on to the next thing. And then the next thing, if, you know, reevaluate that in a couple of years and, you know, constantly reevaluate, see what's the best opportunity for your goals.
And I was reflecting on there because, you know, 4 years ago, I bought them and then I refinanced them when the interest rates went really low and they're both right around 3.5%. And, you know, when I bought them, I was like, man, I'll just probably hold on these forever. And then just as, you know, life changes and more kids come in the family and, you know, getting, I think, a more sophisticated view on, you know, how to keep capital working for it. It's like, wow, that low interest rate means is a lot less important to me than I thought it was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's been, it was fun to reflect on.
It's just an ingredient, I think, in the overall, you know, mix of the portfolio.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. Speaking of selling properties, Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to sell a single family home that currently has a 0% interest rate. It's paid off. So kind of same thing, just kind of debt equity in it. I think that we're kind of capped out in terms of where I see the, you know, obviously this is just a guess, of course, but where I see the value of this home going, I don't think it's going to, you know, be considerably higher in the next several years. I don't see rents going up considerably higher as well, just because of the components of the property. It doesn't have a lot of the features that I like to see. It's a smaller home. It's a 2-bed, 1-bath, no garage. So that's kind of, you know, a bummer for a lot of tenants. So, you know, just kind of looking in our portfolio and I can anticipate probably some CapEx coming up on this home over the next several years. Knock on wood. It's been a really good property to us since we've purchased it. But yeah, close to doubled in value. I think it's just kind of run its course. So I think that, you know, just to kind of avoid some future headaches, we're probably just going to sell it. Did a lazy 1031, on with this property. So we already purchased the fourplex, did a cost seg. I got the numbers back for it. If you guys are interested in hearing, it was a $660K purchase price, and at 60% bonus depreciation, they've identified $109,000 in the first year.
$108,000
That's for 2024. Yes. Okay. That's at the 60%. So if the Senate passes the 100% bonus depreciation, you know, thing that they're talking about, I think we would be at $155K, which would exceed any sort of gain that we would get on the sale of this property. I'm anticipating about $135,000 maybe, on the sale of the property that we're talking about. So either way, if we don't get that 100% bonus depreciation, we're talking about a gain of, like, I don't know, less than $30,000. So it's not a big deal.
I mean, that'll be what, a $7,000 tax bill?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was penciling in. So not a big deal, if that's the case. But if we do get the bonus depreciation, then I can go into my active income since I'm a reps and kind of, you know, pull out from there. But yeah, the debate right now, and, you know, if anyone has any comments or feedback, I might be shooting myself in the foot welcoming feedback on a podcast, but sure. Basically.
Oh, YouTube comments are going to be so friendly to you, Jenny. They're the best in the world.
Always. Yeah. So kind of the debate in our house right now is, do we do a true 1031 with the sale of this property and 1031 it into another property, or do we just stick with the lazy 1031 that we've already completed the purchase on that property, which I really like. And then my view is to just take the proceeds from the sale and recast the mortgage on the purchase property that we already
bought. You would recast your mortgage with that, really?
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the mortgage is like 7.5%. So that's guaranteed 7.5% in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my thought. My husband wants to do a 1031. He wants to get more properties, which I'm like, too much. But yeah. So if anyone has any, insight, let us know.
I think you're getting closer. You might. I have my crystal ball says you're going to make your first passive investment sometime in the next 5 years, Jenny.
I don't know about that. We'll see.
The recasting loan. Okay, so Troy, first off, what is recasting of the loan? A lot of people don't know that term. What
happens? Recasting. Yep. That? Yeah, it's something I've done personally, and I've had a lot of clients do, where you just, if you've had a large principal reduction on the outstanding balance, you can recalculate the P&I portion of the payment for the remaining term at the current rate. So 360 payment loan, 30-year loan, say you're 2 years down the road, and then so the remaining term. So if you threw the money at it, it would just accelerate the loan, right? You just paid off early with the same payment, but by recasting it, you get the benefit of the principal reduction. And then it helps the monthly cash flow, which is what Jenny would be going after. And like she said, it's return on, you know, you're obviously knocking out that interest on that balance. So, you know, you're getting a guaranteed return by doing that.
Yeah.
And I've never personally done a recasting loan. And it's something that really you can only do usually once or twice on a loan, Troy. It's not something you do with here's $1,000, here's $5,000. It's usually when you have a pretty large chunk of money like Jenny,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It needs to be, you can't do it just, you know, every $5,000 or $1,000 you pay extra. They're not going to do that. So it's a little bit of a process. It can take a little bit, month or 2 months to get put through. Usually it's free, doesn't cost anything. And you'll have to check with your servicer to verify how much. And I would definitely recommend talking to your servicer before you put that chunk of money at them. And then if they give you any pushback, that would be a problem on doing the recast. So just make sure that they're good to go with the recast before you start throwing money at them.
So what are the odds, Jenny? Do you think you're going to win or your husband's going to win?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think it's a coin flip right now. So we'll see.
If you buy a new property, you should make him property management. Property
I agree. I agree. I think he should manage, if we do buy one more, then he should be the sole manager of that building. So,
I mean, the other option is you could invest it with Jeff.
Yeah.
He puts together some crazy deals.
Yep.
Yes. Welcome to Denver.
What were you saying, Troy?
No, I was going to say Jenny can train her husband up on doing the property management. Let him do the next one and let him be the property manager. That's kind of, I think, a good idea. Maybe he likes it.
Yeah, he's a really good property manager. Yeah, because we split duties before I did full-time real estate. So he's a good PM. Yeah.
I was going to say something's a really good one because he's delegated it to you.
She knows.
That's the best manager.
There you go. Give it to somebody else.
I like your idea of recasting the loan journey. That was not on my thought process when you talked about it.
Let's not talk to Jeff.
Yeah. I like the idea of you recasting the loan because I know you pretty well. I know your risk profile and why you think. I think that's a really smart move. And like I said, you look at that way. Hey, it's a guaranteed 7.5% return on your money. Pretty darn good right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Less risk too.
Yeah.
Expanding too quickly. That always is a worry of mine.
Cool. Well, we got everything off the agenda today. We talked some news. We talked some stats, we talked some deals, and we talked some portfolio moves. So I think this is a great podcast. I appreciate you guys coming out. Anyone out there who's listening or watching, you guys have any questions on what to do with your rental portfolio, let us know. We can all sit down and go over some options with you through Property Llama. We often loop in Troy to come out with some lending scenarios with us as well. I was talking with a client last week who had a interest rate or a loan and a HELOC on her property. She wanted to consolidate. I was like, hey, that's one option. Go talk to Troy. He can run those numbers for you. So if you guys have any questions on what to do with your portfolio,
absolutely,
reach out. We know the markets. We know our niches. And if you're interested in buying your next rental property as well, reach out to us. We'll sit down and tell you what's working and what's not working in the current market. And we're here to, help you out. And we like doing deals. So Troy, thank you. Jeff, thank you. Jenny, thank you. We'll see you guys next month.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.